From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Authentic and John Velasquez have the lead as they come down to the 16th ball. Tis the Law still trying to get him. Authentic, Tis the Law, here's the wire. Authentic has won the Kentucky Derby.
And now they're past the 8th pole, and it is Firenze Fire with the lead. Funny Guy giving chase with Share the Ride, but it's going to be Firenze Fire. Victorious in the Mosberg, 1-3.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
Swiss Skydiver digs in at the rail. Authentic on the outside. These two putting on a show. The Derby winner in the filly. Swiss Skydiver inside. Authentic outside. They're nose to nose. All the way to the wire. And it is going to be a photo finish.
See, there's the devil, strikes the front of the eighth pole. Swiss Skydiver's trying hard, but she's still second. Not today for Gamine. It is she, there's the devil, turning back Swiss Skydiver, Gamine, and all the rest. She, there's the devil, scores in the Oaks.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Hello again, everyone. Good morning, and welcome to another jam-packed edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, ready to roll for the next couple of hours. You, of course, are listening throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, or digitally with our live streaming or the podcast of the show on our HRRN website at horseracingradio.net. Did you like the Breeders' Cup last weekend? Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. You had everything you could possibly ask for in a Breeders' Cup, in a major sporting event. You had upsets starting on Friday with Fire at Will, paying $62.40 for a $2 win bet in the juvenile turf. That kicked things off. Mike Maker, the trainer, Three Diamonds Farm, the owners, Ricardo Santana Jr., the jockey aboard Fire at Will. On Saturday, the hits kept on coming on the upset side of things. Audaria, the French bred, knocking off Rushing Fall, who was favored in that race, by the way, in the Filly and Mare Turf, ridden by Pierre-Charles Boudot for trainer J.R. Fanshaw and Mrs. A.M. Swinburne, the owner. Audaria, a big win there. And then Order of Australia, the biggest upset of the 2020 Breeders' Cup, pulling off a 73-1 shocker after drawing into the field the morning of the race. That was in the Breeders' Cup mile. Wasn't even supposed to be in the race. That topped off an Aidan O'Brien trifecta in the Breeders' Cup mile. And how about this? You might find this surprising, considering all the success that Aidan has had in the Breeders' Cup and in turf races. It was his very first win in the mile. Aidan's very first win in the Breeders' Cup mile. I was shocked to learn that when I was prepping for our show. Order of Australia, owned by Derek Smith, Mrs. John Magner, Michael Tabor, and Anne Marie O'Brien. And the second Breeders' Cup win of the day for Pierre-Charles Boudot. You also had heartbreak. You know, when you have upsets, you have heartbreak too. Not only for those horses and the connections that didn't win, especially horses that thought they were going to win. That's always very disappointing. But how would you like to be jockey Christophe Soumillon, who tested positive for COVID after arriving here from Europe? He took a second test, positive again, confirmed the first one. Had to go into isolation from everything that was reported by Breeders' Cup. He was doing fine, asymptomatic. We wish Christophe all the best. But both horses he was scheduled to ride on Saturday won, both of them. Order of Australia and Tarnawa in the Breeders' Cup turf. Very disappointing. Great news for the jockeys that got the pickup mounts, but you have to feel for Christophe Soumillon. On the flip side of that, you had some amazing human interest stories. Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez, two Breeders' Cup wins, including his first ever win in the Breeders' Cup Classic aboard Authentic. Congrats to Johnny V. I mentioned Pierre-Charles Boudot, his two wins, seemingly out of nowhere. How many of you knew who Pierre-Charles Boudeau was before this Breeders' Cup? I didn't. I'll admit it. I was not familiar with that jockey. Everybody knows who he is now. What a day for him on Saturday. How about trainer Butch Reed Jr.? Saddled Vequist, the daughter of Juvenile and Derby winner Nyquist, to that huge win on Friday in the Juvenile Fillies. And the story, sticking with the human interest theme, fantastic. Butch Reed, people will forget this, he had already saddled the Breeders' Cup winner. This was not his first. He's not a household name like a Baffert, a Pletcher, an Asmussen, a Chad Brown. But Butch Reed had won a Breeders' Cup race in 2011, the Breeders' Cup Marathon at Churchill. A Fleet Again was the horse he saddled that day. And the cool thing about Vequist is that owners Gary Barber, Adam Wachtel, and owner-breeder Thomas McGrath purchased the filly after she was beaten in her debut at Park. She finished second that day. They liked what they saw. They bought the filly. They could have moved her anywhere. Gary Barber could have said, all right, let's bring her to Mark Cassie. They could have gone anywhere. They said, nope, Butch Reed, we're going to stick with you. And he rewards them with a massive win in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. You're going to hear from Butch Reed coming up at 8:35 Eastern. He joined me for a full hour on my trainer talk show on Wednesday. What a visit that was. If you, do yourself a favor. Head over there and take a listen at some point when you have an hour to spend. Go to horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast. That trainer talk show presented by Fasic Tipton with Butch Reed was just so much fun to do. He told so many great stories, and the story of A Fleet Again is incredible. But the story of Vequist is outstanding, and it made for one of the true great human interest stories surrounding this year's Breeders' Cup. How about trainer Brad Cox? Let's not overlook him. He'll be with me at 9:40 Eastern time to wrap up the show today. Four Breeders' Cup wins. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that equals the record set by Richard Mandela. Man, oh man, Della, what a day, as Tom Durkin would say. But that was a whole different format. Remember, that was a one-day event back then. Less races, taking nothing away from what Brad Cox accomplished. He won four Breeders' Cup races. That's tremendous. And I do believe it equals that record. How about trainer Ron Moquette and his 7-year-old gelding Whitmore? He joined me on the program a couple of weeks ago, and I told you, whether you liked Whitmore to win the race or not, whether you were betting him or not, you had to cheer for Whitmore. And there really wasn't a dry eye in the house at Keeneland when it won. Ronnie Moquette was crying. Everybody was crying. This was such a special win. Whitmore, who always shows up and tries, finally breaking through in the Breeders' Cup Sprint in his fourth consecutive effort. And I told you a couple of weeks ago, when we were talking about this horse and talking about Ronnie, that much like athletes in sports who take on the personality of their head coach, Whitmore, I believe, has taken on the personality of his trainer, Ron Moquette. I told you before, Ronnie's a former Golden Glove boxer. He's a tough guy. He has battled through illness the past couple of years, illness that kept him away from his barn for some time. Couldn't even go near the horses. That was killing him. He had to watch the races at Oaklawn. Luckily, he lives right next to the track, but he had to watch through a fence. And he could hear, when he couldn't be at the races, he could hear the crowd. And when Whitmore would run and win, he knew he had won because he could hear the crowd sitting in his living room. And he knew that roar. It was kind of like a tiger roar that you hear about in golf. There was something different about a Whitmore roar at Oaklawn. And Ronnie battled through all that. He's still fighting the illness, but now he's able to be around the horses. He has to be careful, but he's able to be around the horses and around his operation again. And for the horse, for the team, this was about as good as it gets. For the sport, this was about as good as it gets. And Ronnie's going to be with me to kick off the show in a few minutes, 8:15 Eastern. He'll be here. And we'll look back on that massive win in the sprint, finally, in try number four. You also had brilliant performances, which made up this year's Breeders' Cup. You always seem to, but this was very special. You had Gamine winning the Filly and Mare sprint, just dominating that one, new track record. Nick's Go dominating the dirt mile, same scenario. And how about Monomoy Girl? I think, in my opinion, the storylines, the top storylines surrounding this year's Breeders' Cup, you had Whitmore and you had Monomoy Girl. Those, to me, absolutely the top two storylines. Monomoy Girl, with everything that she had to overcome, being on the sidelines for about 18 months after winning her first Breeders' Cup distaff in 2018, coming back for Brad Cox and winning the second one on Saturday was really special, and she did it with style. And you know, we thought that was going to be Monomoy Girl's final career start. Well, all of a sudden, she steps into the auction ring over on Newtown Pike at Fasig Tipton, and she tops the sale, $9.5 million, sold to B. Wayne Hughes, Spendthrift Farm. That price, by the way, for Monomoy Girl, set a world record for a racing and broodmare prospect sold at public auction and tied for the third highest price ever realized at the Fasig Tipton November sale. That price was set in 2017 by Songbird. And congratulations to Fasig, by the way. A little sidebar here, stepping away from the Breeders' Cup for a minute. Overall, 142 horses sold for a total of more than $80 million. That's an 18% increase in gross from 2019 for the November sale, and the second highest gross all time for that particular sale. The average rose 6% to $565,000 with a median of $200,000. All told, how about this, 22 fillies and mares, 22 sold for $1 million or more. Tip your hat to Boyd Browning and Max Hodge and the entire team at Fasig Tipton. Across the board, as good as it gets. You want to sell your horse, you want to get it sold, you want to do it right, go to Fasig Tipton. It's that simple. All class. Well done, Fasig Tipton. Speaking of Spendthrift and Monomoy Girl, how about Authentic? Fending off all challengers to win the Breeders' Cup Classic, giving Bob Baffert a record fourth win in the Classic. Of course, he had won it three times. That was a record, but now he adds to that record with four. You're going to hear from Ned Toffey, the general manager of Spendthrift, coming up at 9:20. Plenty of things to talk about with Ned. It's going to be a jam-packed show, looking back on the Breeders' Cup and looking ahead to next year. As I told you, Monomoy Girl has returned to the barn of Brad Cox, going to stay in training. Same thing with Got Stormy, purchased by Spendthrift, going to remain in training. Cool stuff. We'll talk to Ned about that coming up in just a little bit. Poll question at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. What was the bigger surprise in this year's Breeders' Cup? You have two choices. Order of Australia, upset in the mile, pulling off the upset in the mile. Or trainer Chad Brown being shut out. Ofer at this year's Breeders' Cup. Shocker. That's a tough call. Order of Australia was what, 73-1? Wonder what the odds were on Chad Brown not winning a single race in the Breeders' Cup. He's too good. That's just, and his horses are too good. Shocking. So what was the bigger surprise in this year's Breeders' Cup? That upset in the mile by Order of Australia or trainer Chad Brown being shut out for the 2 days? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, another way that you can weigh in. I'll try to pass those along if I get time later in the show. But it's a busy show. It kicks off with Ron Moquette next. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Millridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance. Now in his third year at stud at Millridge, covering 118 mares in his first year and 116 in his second. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners and associates with leading breeders. Included in this year's Keeneland November sale are broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and leading breeder George Strawbridge, all selling without reserve. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
Hi, I'm Leah Jarmati, and I love listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
CC Rocket is in fourth. Diamond Oops and Lasting Legacy move as a team to the center of the track. Echo Town and Manny Wah in some traffic looking toward the inside. Jasper Prince the leader. Here comes Empire Gold on the outside of that one. Echo Town, an awkward move there. CC Rocket is moving up on the outside. Here's Whitmore striding forward for the lead in the final furlong of the Breeders' Cup Sprint. What a day in the career of this 7-year-old. Whitmore, Aaron Ortiz Jr. have won the Breeders' Cup Sprint in 1 minute 8.61 seconds.
That call still gives me goosebumps. Kurt Becker with the call of the Breeders' Cup Sprint. Whitmore breaking through in his fourth consecutive try at doing so in that particular race. Win number 15 lifetime, and it was the biggest win of his career. And the biggest win in the career of trainer Ron Moquette, who is with me now here on HRRN. Ronnie, first of all, congratulations, my friend. What a day.
Thank you very much, Mike. We're really proud for this horse, and we're so pumped up.
I can imagine you would be. Are you still on cloud nine? Have you taken a lot of curtain calls and received a whole bunch of texts and stuff? Are you still kind of flying high?
You know what? I figured out that there's a lot of people that love this horse, and it seems like that I'm the way to get through to tell him that. So, immediately after the race, when I turned my phone on after I got out of the test barn and all that, there was 709 texts.
Whoa.
And, yeah, and that's not even counting the calls from a lot of people that I respect and very impactful people a lot of trainers called me, of course, like Nick Zito, Steve Asmussen, Baffert, Pletcher. I mean, all of these guys took time to Mandela. I mean, they all took time to call out of appreciation of the horse. And that goes to prove that at the end of the day, people just love when horses try, you know?
Yeah, you and I talked a couple of weeks ago, and one of the things that I said, and I'll say it again, that whether you liked him to win the race or not, whether you were betting on Whitmore or not, this had to be a horse that, as he's making that run, coming from far back as he customarily does, and you heard Kurt with the call, as he's getting closer with every stride, you had to be. I was cheering for him. Thank goodness our microphones were off during the race, because I was cheering for this horse to get to the wire and finally break through. He does it, and as you said, you're as happy for the horse as much as you are for you and for all the connections, Ronnie.
Yeah, it was very surreal. I don't know if anybody could, you know, for me, it was like an out-of-body experience. I was watching it, and I was like, you know, I know my horse, and I know the way he's moving, and I was thinking, if he gets through, you know, and then about that time he got through, I was like, well, if he catches that other horse, and then, I mean, I was like play-by-play in my head, and just the last, probably, the two here Whitmores from Kurt Becker, I was just like, I don't even remember getting to the winner's circle. That's how pumped up I was.
Yeah, my wife Michelle was there on site. Of course, we were providing the radio broadcast. I was back in the studio, and it was one of those moments that I just wish I could have been part of it. She said she looked over at you. You had tears in your eyes. I think I had tears in my eyes just watching the whole thing unfold. And I think so many people did, just because of, you know, for the love of the game, for the love of the horse, and everything that is good about thoroughbred racing. That, to me, is what Whitmore represents.
Well, thank you. You know, one of the things that really cracked me up, that was like, it's like how many people said, I didn't play him in my pick four, or I didn't have him in the exacta or whatever, but I started cheering for him when he made the lead. And, you know, for a game that's depending on gamblers and people investing their money, you know, for them to immediately go from, I want what's best for my ticket or what's best for my situation, to all of a sudden stopping and going, I want this horse to win, even though it doesn't do me any good financially. I thought that shows where we're at, you know. I mean, people love it whenever good things happen to horses that are deserving.
He was 18-1, and, you know, there will be plenty of people that didn't bet on him. Did you?
Yes, I did.
Good man. I figured you might have a couple of bucks on him.
I told everybody that I talked to that I thought we should. I don't mind. That's what I told my son when we were talking about gambling. I said, I don't mind being wrong, you know, if I'm wrong, but I'm sure not going to feel like I think we can win and not put my money where my mouth is.
You know, one of the things you told me when we talked a couple of weeks ago was that you were just hoping he would get an honest pace to close into. And they went 21.64, 44.66 for the half mile. And obviously that was enough to do the trick. But, Ronnie, I think they could have gone a little bit slower. And this horse was so full of run on Saturday that he would have run them down anyway.
Yeah, I mean, hats off to IRAD for listening. And, you know, the horse was ready, and it worked out to where, you know, he didn't look at the Phoenix race as a telltale sign. He listened to me from what I was telling him, and he listened to my wife and Greta, and we all kind of got on him and said, this is what you have to do, and do not move. I don't care how much he drags you. You do not start moving until you get to the straightaway, and if we get outrun because the pace is slow, and that's my fault. Don't worry about it. You won't get it from me. Just please do this. He's obviously one of the top riders in the country, and he doesn't need any instructions from me. But Whitmore's a little quirky, and I appreciate him listening to the little idiosyncrasies and using it, you know, whenever it's time to apply it.
Yeah, he did his double barrel kick as he customarily does when he was moving into the starting gate. I actually caught that on the radio broadcast as we were getting ready for the start, and you predicted it. You said this is what he does. He's going to do it again. But one thing that's cool about this whole story, Ronnie, you're the one who always comes on with me. You are the voice. Whitmore can't talk for himself, although I wish I could do an interview with him. But this is a team effort. It's not just about Ron Moquette. Talk about the entire team that's involved with making this happen.
You know, luckily we've got Carlos that's been his groom and has allowed him to chew on him for ever since he was two. We've got Leslie, it's his pony girl that she won the Godolphin Award last year, but she's a 100% horseman. We've got the same Shedrow Foreman. Our therapy people are the same therapy people, Palmer and the spa. You know, we do MagnaWave, we do vibrating plates. You know, obviously Greta Kunzweiler is as important to our organization as you can imagine. She works him, and he's not easy to work. If you remember the work before the Kentucky Derby, he just pulled himself up to the outside and tried to kick the outrider horse, and that was on TV. I mean, he's you got to be able to feather him. She's, for a horse like him, she says that when she gets off of Whitmore, she feels like she needs therapy. Because he pulls whatever little thread of something that's bothering you, and he goes, oh, that makes you uncomfortable? Well, let's talk about this, you know. So Greta is unbelievable, and if I'm in charge of all the decision making and all that, then the application of getting it done goes through Laura and Greta, and it's a lot of stuff. I mean, we take him to we have to haul him to go get shod. At the clinic, you know, with his blacksmith at Rood and Riddle is Scott, and you know, and then he comes and checks him, drives wherever we're at to check him on race days, and I mean, it's as big a team effort as you can imagine, and I know everybody that has success has a great team, but I wouldn't trade my team or any member of it with anybody.
Talking with trainer Ron Moquette, fresh off that huge win with Whitmore in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, his fourth consecutive appearance in the race. He finally breaks through at Keeneland last Saturday. Ronnie, I was told a story about a list that you sat down and created from memory with all of the different Breeders' Cup Sprint winners going back to the very beginning. Is it a true story?
Yeah. Yeah, I was nervous, and sitting at the barn about a week from today. I was sitting at the barn. They just got through running the first race, and I decided that I was going to go to my truck and grab a piece of paper and try to write down as many of the Breeders' Cup Sprint winners as I could. And you know, I've never made any bones about it. This is the race that I wanted to win. I mean, of course, I'd like to win the Kentucky Derby and whatever, but I chose this race in my mind. I wanted to win over the Kentucky Derby, and I've said it in every publication that asked me. But so I've decided that I was going to try to go by memory and see how many of them I could do with the years and everything. And I'm a nerd about horse racing, so I got a whole bunch of them. And the best thing was is that when it got to 19, I wrote my Tolley, and whenever 20, I left it blank. And then when I went to put on my jacket to get ready to go over, and I just reached over there and wrote Whitmore's name down for 20 before we went to the test barn, the holding barn, before we ran. And then I forgot I did it. And whenever I got back, I was grazing Whitmore, and I asked somebody to put the flower blanket in my truck. And whenever they did, they said, "What's that?" And I said, "Oh, that's pretty neat." I said, "That's my list of all the Breeders' Cup winners." And one of the guys there was Doc Slaughter, was checking on him and writing his health certificate so he could go back to Churchill. And he said, "What is this?" I said, "No, that's my list I wrote of all the winners." He goes, "Well, you wrote this down before you left." And I said, "Yeah." And so I actually wrote down Whitmore before we went to the paddock that he was the 2020 Breeders' Cup winner. So I guess I just, you know, willed it in for him, you know?
Yeah, fantastic story. Ronnie Moquette, the Nostradamus of thoroughbred racing now, predicting Whitmore's victory before it even happened. And why not? Defend your player. I would have wrote his name on that line too, Ronnie. And, again, it was such a special moment for all of us, and I can't thank you and the team and Whitmore enough for providing that to racing fans all over the world. It is what this sport is truly all about. And, again, Whitmore, the type of horse that you think about when you think about thoroughbred racing. Before I let you go, what's next for the big horse now? What do the next few months look like for him?
Well, he's going to spend the next 4 to 5 weeks with Rebecca Maker at her farm. That's his annual trip to her. It's like going to stay with an aunt. You know, she loves him and she takes care of him for a little bit, and he gets a rest and relaxation. And then we'll pick him up and bring him to Oaklawn, and you know, we'll start the procedure and see how he's doing, if he wants to be an 8-year-old racehorse.
Well, Ronnie, listen, congratulations, and pass along my congratulations to the entire team, and appreciate the visit here this morning. And let's get back there again next year and go for another one.
Thank you so much. Thank you. We appreciate everything you've done for us.
You're the greatest. Ronnie Moquette here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Fantastic. That, to me, that and Monomoy Girl, the two top stories surrounding this year's Breeders' Cup. I think both stories, incredible. The human interest story surrounding them, the horse story, just what this sport is all about. All right, typically we would bring you your Lexus Legends of the Turf story, presented by the Lexus Store of Lexington at this point, but we are running a couple minutes behind. So we'll bypass the story. We'll have a word for the Lexus Store of Lexington. When I come back, you're going to hear from trainer Butch Reed Jr. looking back on his huge win in the Juvenile Fillies. That's next, right after this on HRN.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus Store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus Store of Lexington, and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Airdrie Studs Cairo Prince is the leading third crop sire by number of stakes winners, stakes horses, graded stakes winners, and graded stakes horses. He's also a top five general sire by the number of two-year-old winners so far in 2020. And his current crop of yearlings is his first conceived at a $25,000 stud fee. Yearlings from Cairo Prince's fourth crop sold for up to $400,000 this year, underlining his incredible commercial appeal. At $15,000 stands and nurses for 2021, Cairo Prince is value in the extreme, standing at Airdrie Stud. Think about it.
Recognized for raising and selling racehorses, Millridge has raised or sold 8 Breeders' Cup winners since 2000, including Oscar Performance. Now in his third year at stud at Millridge, covering 118 mares in his first year and 116 in his second. Since 2000, Millridge has raised or sold 35 Grade 1 winners and associates with leading breeders. Included in this year's Keeneland November sale are broodmare offerings from Judmont Farms and leading breeder George Strawbridge, all selling without reserve. Millridge, raising and selling racehorses.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Vequist in fourth, they're at the quarter pole. Simply Ravishing is fifth, and she is still running some 6 lengths from the front to the top of the short stretch. Day out of the office, opening up on a 3-length lead as they turn for home. Vequist up the inside. Princess Noor is still there on the outside. Girl Daddy still far back with Simply Ravishing. Vequist is coming up the rail. Here's Vequist up the inside. Now to challenge Day out of the office, and Vequist just keeps on running. Vequist, Joel Rosario, to win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies.
DeQuist, the daughter of Nyquist, getting the victory in the Juvenile Fillies. Huge, huge effort for trainer Butch Reed Jr., his second win in a Breeders' Cup race. And Butch joined me this past week on our trainer talk show presented by Fasig Tipton. That full hour interview is on our website at horseracingradio.net. But I thought it would be fun to look back on that race with Butch and bring it to you right here on the Equine Forum as well. Well, when you look at some of the numbers that you have put up in your career, and according to Equibase, that win in the Juvenile Fillies marked your 13th graded stakes victory. It was win number 794 overall in your career, and stakes win number 48. What a way to reach those milestones, winning a race like the Juvenile Fillies.
Yeah, it was great. You know, it's a thing you work. We've been at it for 35 years, however long we've been at it for. My wife and I and my daughter. So it was to catch it in a race like that, and for the owners, was just amazing.
I remember when you joined me on the show in 2018, and it was right after you won the Remsen with Maximus Mischief, and you were worried about your voice holding up because you said all you had done was talk since that victory. How about now? Have you done plenty of talking since the Juvenile Fillies?
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, there's so many friends and well wishes along the way besides the media stuff, you know, that everybody wants to talk about and be part of it. So it's just a great feeling to have, you know, we've got plenty of support when we got back here to Philly and everybody was happy and high-fiving. Well, you can't high-five in these days, but everybody was having a great time and wanted to talk about it. So, yes, my voice is starting to wear a little thin, but we'll survive. It's a good problem to have.
No, it certainly is. Take me back to right around 3:52 on Friday afternoon as VeeQuist comes over to the paddock and then makes her way into the starting gate and, of course, eventually crosses the finish line first. Take me through the moments before the race and then take me through the race as you're watching it.
Well, I mean, it was amazing. When she came into the paddock, to me anyway, I'm sure I'm a little prejudiced, but she won the paddock show to me because when she came into the paddock, she just looked spectacular. And she's always been a filly with a really good head on her shoulder, so she was calm. We had schooled her in the paddock, my wife, Virginia, and Teresa, my assistant, had been up there with her for close to 2 weeks. And when she came into the paddock and her coat was gleaming and all dappled out, and she was cool as a cucumber, where some of the others were acting up a little bit, I felt pretty good right there. So the paddock show was just amazing. And she, you know, amazing filly with a tremendous head on her shoulders. So I was feeling pretty confident when you're coming up to a race, that's the kind of thing that you worry about. Almost like you don't have time to worry about the outcome of the race. I mean, is everything going smoothly? Did we show up for the dance on time? And all the stuff that runs through your head. And actually, I was meeting the owners for the first time, Gary Barber. I had never really met in person before, so I met him in the paddock. And we had a nice little entourage, my brother Brian, and my daughter Whitney was there also. So it was definitely a high-energy feeling, and, it was nice. Once we got the saddle on her and things were settled down, it was kind of like my job was done there, and we talked to Joelle a little bit, and, there really wasn't much way in instructions on a race like that. And with a rider like Joelle Rosario, I don't know what I could add to what he knows for sure. But, it was just an electric feeling for sure.
What a way to get to know Gary Barber and to endear yourself to Gary by winning a race like this for him. And I know that he put a lot of trust in you by keeping the horse with you after the horse was purchased. It wasn't just Gary, it was the other owners too. But they all believed in you. And to be able to hand them that trophy after winning the Juvenile Fillies had to be special for you, Butch.
Oh, absolutely it was. You know, we've had three starts together and all in grade ones. We got two wins in the second, so that's not a bad to start out a relationship. And, man, looks to me, well, it should be an Eclipse Award, but I hate to be presumptive on something like that. But, and Gary or Adam Wachtel, and now I just found out that neither one of them have ever won an Eclipse before. So for them, you know,
really?
To show the faith in me, yeah, I was surprised to hear that myself. And to hear, and be able to, and the guys that showed the faith in me for a guy from Philly, it doesn't really come across too many of these kind of horses. We've certainly had our share along the way, but for those guys to give me that kind of an opportunity and be able to pay them back just a little bit was really a good feeling.
Yeah, I know Gary had mentioned in his post-race press conference and even in his post-race interview with NBC, he had mentioned that he now has a farm in Pennsylvania and he has several babies up there that you will be training. And it's got to be nice for you, Butch. I know a lot of times in sports, for example, they say it's tough for a player to always be playing at a high level, looking over their shoulder, wondering if, you know, look, I throw an interception, am I coming out of the game? If I make an error, am I going to be pulled out of the game? You don't have to worry about that now. It seems as if you've got this established relationship and they have such belief in you that now you can just go and train these horses and do your thing and not be looking over your shoulder. That has to be huge too.
Oh, absolutely. Especially with guys with, you know, quality and class guys like they are, you know. So it was, you know, you're constantly rechecking yourself and making sure that you're making the right decisions along the way. And those guys have just been tremendous. They're involved. They like to talk about it, talk about the spots, talk about jockeys. And they make it so much easier for you, their involvement and their understanding of the sport. So it was a relationship that I think worked well from the beginning. And they do their homework, too. They had researched me, and I hope things had worked out that way. But, you know, for a guy like me to get a horse and, you know, for Tom McGrath to be able to stay in, you know, he's a homebred filly to Tom Bred and from a mare that we built relatively inexpensively down at that Timonium two-year-old training sale. And having an opportunity to everybody stay involved and go along for the ride is just fabulous. It's just a fabulous time.
Her final running time, 142.30. That's the fastest running of the juvenile fillies since Songbird did it at Keeneland in 2015. That's pretty good company there, Butch. But when she crosses the finish line, that moment, what was that like for you? Take me there with you.
It was kind of funny because, I mean, it wasn't a big crowd there, obviously, but there was enough people there that you could, you know, there was a bit of a crowd. I wasn't staying there by myself, but our whole little entourage, kind of everybody went their separate directions. You know, my brother was in one section. I was down past the wire, and I think my wife and daughter were down by the winner's circle. So once I saw her coming through, I started jumping up and down, and people were looking at me like I was crazy, all 300 pounds of me. I think they were more worried than anything else. But and I heard my brother hooping it up, and that kind of ran underneath the grandstand. And I heard him hooping it up over in the next section, so I ran to him, and we, of course, had a big embrace, and we sprinted down to the winner's circle where the whole other group was standing down there. So for a little while, I felt like Jim Balvano after North Carolina State won the championship, looking for somebody to hug. But we were all running down, so it was just you know, an indescribable moment for my daughter, who's now you know, a 30-year-old pediatrician, but she'd been drugged through you know, our 20 years of up and down the highway between Monmouth Park and New York and Florida, and she had been in, you know, 10 or 12 different schools by the time she graduated from high school. So for her to last through all that, and then you know, very fortunately, she almost couldn't make it. So I was so proud of the fact and happy with the fact that she made it and was able to enjoy it and sharing it with all of us.
Spectacular to be able to share that with, you know, not just your team. You mentioned your assistant Teresa, but your family too. That is just, that's what this sport is all about, and it happened, and the stars aligned, and it came together perfectly. Visiting with trainer Butch Reed Jr. here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton, as you heard, trainer of VQuest, who took the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies last Friday at Keeneland. It was a race you heard right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Butch, I remember. The other thing I remember about that first show when you joined us in 2018 was I asked you if you were superstitious, and you said, not really, a little bit maybe. You said you wear the same tie if things are going well, things like that. And the tie you wore when Maximus Mischief won the Remsen was the same tie that you wore to your daughter Whitney's wedding, and you just talked about her. Was there any significance to the tie that you wore last Friday at Keeneland?
Yeah, I didn't wear a tie. That was the significance.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah. No, actually, I mean, I'm not that much of a clothes horse, but they had bought me a new outfit for the spinaway, and then I changed it for the frisette where we got beat. So I had to go back to the spinaway outfit for the Breeders' Cup. It worked out perfectly. So
fantastic. Yeah. So you had confidence in this filly from day one. Obviously, she was beaten in her debut at Parks, but you turned right around and threw her right into the grade one at Saratoga, and she delivered with a huge performance that day. What is it about her that stood out to you and led you to believe that she could be this caliber?
Well, it's her head. I mean, it's all about, I mean, besides being a big, tall, rangy filly with good natural speed, her head is what makes her what she is. She doesn't worry about anything, and there's nothing in a race that is going to discourage her. And when she got beat in her debut, we knew we were way under running her. A race came up going 4.5 furlongs. It was a little bit ridiculous when you think about it, but it was more or less a schooling race. I got to be in there with 7 other horses, which you can't reproduce in the mornings. It's hard to. So that was the idea between for the 4.5 furlong race. We knew it was way under her best distance. She had already breathed 7/8 of a mile in like 125 before I even ran her in that race. So, it was, just a nice setup. And then when, after that race, when Wachtel and Barber got involved, I got to say that they were more, they're more the chance takers and risk players than probably I am. So I may have been looking for a maiden race, when they were in hunting for the spin away. So it was their push that that got us there.
Now, thank goodness for risk takers like that. It certainly paid off, and she became a grade one winner, now a multiple grade one winner. Her next race in the Frisette, she's beaten by Day Out of the Office, and that race obviously proved to be a key race because Day Out of the Office ran a huge race behind VQuist in the Juvenile Fillies the other day. Did you kind of know going in that you had to do things maybe even a little bit differently to turn the tables on her, or what was the thought process going in?
That's a very tough filly, and then to get her the second time is quite an accomplishment because she isn't going to give you anything. So, we had a change in riders. There was nothing personal against Saez or anything like that, but we just felt Joelle might be a little bit, in a little bit better position on that one coming around in the next track. But, I thought we were certainly competitive with that filly, and we had a terrible post in the Frisette. We broke from the one hole in that one turn mile, and I don't think she really got a full chance to show her true ability in the Frisette. So we were confident. We were at least competitive with Day Out of the Office and the others. It was a lot of people said, it was the shortest field on the Breeders' Cup weekend, but it was all maybe the toughest field because I believe there was 4 undefeated horses in there. So there was quite a few accomplished horses in there, and to get the, it was hard to say we were confident, but I knew I had a good horse that was going to run good. So as confident as you can be, I suppose.
Yeah, not only did you have to deal with Day Out of the Office, but you had to deal with horses like Princess Noor from the barn of Bob Baffert, who had come into the race in top form too. And obviously VQuist proved up to the task and then some. When you thought about stretching her out to 2 turns for the first time, and she wasn't the only one in that boat coming into the Juvenile Fillies. There were other fillies that were looking to do the same thing. But when you look at doing that, and you look at her pedigree, being by Kentucky Derby champion Nyquist and Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, and out of a mineshaft mare, Butch, that had to give you a lot of confidence that she would handle the assignment.
Yeah, as I said before, I think it was her confidence in her head that really what makes her what she is. She doesn't worry about anything. So that was, we thought about it. We were between the Alcibiades and the Frisette as the last prep before the Breeders' Cup, and we decided on the Frisette, even though the Alcibiades was 2 turns, and we kicked that around a little bit. But we wanted a nice fresh horse coming into the Breeders' Cup, and the Frisette was just a lot less shipping and a lot less hassle. The Frisette, we're very close to Belmont Park here, so we shipped her up the morning of the race, and she was back in her stall by 7-8 o'clock that evening, so it was only one day out of her schedule, and it gave us an extra week from the big races you had running and spin away. So that was what went into that decision making process, but also the fact that I was not concerned that she could get 2 turns. She trains in the morning when nothing bothers her, and that's what gave me confidence to go ahead and let the Breeders' Cup be her first time around 2 turns. So, and we were fortunate enough to have it work out.
Folks who were tuned in to the radio broadcast or watching on TV may have seen you in the winner's circle and said, oh, wow, Butch Reed, who's this guy? This must be his first Breeders' Cup win. That's not the case. You've had several Greatest Stakes winners, as I pointed out earlier, and this is your second win in a Breeders' Cup race because in 2011, when it was at Churchill Downs, a Fleet Again won the Breeders' Cup Marathon that year. So you're undefeated, a perfect 2-for-2 with the Breeders' Cup in Kentucky. You might want to maybe look at moving things to Kentucky.
Yeah, I like that thought. You know, that fact, you know, a couple of people said, well, what was it like, you know, a couple of the interviews were, what's it like to get your first Breeders' Cup win? I said, well, actually, it's not my first Breeders' Cup win, but, you know, I was, as I said, you know, in Kentucky, Breeders' Cup seems to be the way to go. But, you know, they, unfortunately, I think they did away with the Breeders' Cup Marathon, so the that record doesn't hold up quite as well, so maybe people don't recognize it. But, you know, if you win 2 out of 3 in Breeders' Cup races is a pretty good accomplishment, I would say.
What was different about this win on Friday and that first win back in 2011 with the Fleet Again?
You know, this one was more thought out, and we had, you know, it was in the, with the Fleet Again, we were kind of taking a stab. It was almost the same, though. We had just had a change in ownership. New people had bought him. And actually, my daughter was in college then, and I was up in Boston. She went to Wellesley up in Boston, and we were up there for, with her for a hockey game when we found out we were getting in. So I had to grab a suit at the Big and Tall Man store up there and jump on a plane to get to Kentucky in time for that race. So, you know, that it was kind of a more spur-of-the-moment thing for the previous time we were in the Breeders' Cup. This one, we had a fair idea of what we were doing, you know, 2 months out, so we had plenty of time to tank. To plan and figure out our training schedule and our logistics of getting her down here and getting the people down here to get it done. So this one was more of a much more planned out thing, where the last one was like, all right, let's go. We're going to take a shot. And I guess, you know, both of them worked out, fortunately.
Well, worked out in a big way for trainer Butch Reed Jr. Congratulations to him and to the entire team surrounding VQuist with that win in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. And again, if you want to hear that entire interview, hour-long visit with Butch, head over to horseracingradio.net and check out the podcast at your leisure. It's part of our trainer talk show presented by Fasig Tipton that you can hear every Wednesday from 6 to 7 Eastern here on the network. You know, the other thing that came out of that show, the other story that Butch told, and this is what, again, makes this such a great part of what happened at Breeders' Cup. Butch and his wife, they've been together 30-some-odd years. They've been doing this together, working side by side. You know, his wife going all the way back to the Lucien Laurent days and being with Secretariat. She was around Jimmy Crowell and Holy Bull and Gallup, Holy Bull's mother. She's been around some really good horses. But there was a point when Butch and his wife, right after their daughter Whitney was born, went to Gulfstream, got some stalls, and all of a sudden, the owner decided to take the horses away from Butch. He had 22, 23 horses, I think he said. The next morning, he looked down the shed row, there were 18 empty stalls with a newborn, young wife, trying to make a living. But he persevered. He overcame all of that, and here he is with a second Breeders' Cup victory. And congratulations to Butch and again, to the entire team. Just fantastic stuff. I'm going to get to another break. I'll come back. I'll get you set for a very busy second half of the show. By the way, Butch Reed, because of everything he's accomplished, is our industry star of the week for this Saturday morning. Let's not forget that. This segment and that interview presented by our friend Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, and South Bend, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels, and you can check him out at all of the upcoming major sales. Stuart, just a fantastic, fantastic consigner, and my thanks to him for sponsoring that segment and making those interviews possible each and every week. All right, I'm back to get you set for hour two right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
McKenzie, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKenzie was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKenzie scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKenzie is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKenzie. McKenzie holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKenzie is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKenzie, they've done it. McKenzie has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKenzie's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKenzie comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKenzie has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKenzie standing at Gainesway.
A message to help keep you safe. If doctors told us today that we'd made a breakthrough on COVID-19, saving thousands of lives, we would rejoice. Finally, a good news day. We'd feel less afraid that our loved ones would be struck by the invisible enemy. We'd start to feel hope that we could live our lives again. Well, a mask does all that. We can help protect others by covering our noses and mouths, which is how the virus mainly spreads. Masks are a ticket to freedom, to be out in the world, to getting together, back to work, back to doing what we want. If doctors announced we could save lives today, we would grab that breakthrough with both hands. While we wait for a vaccine, grab the breakthrough that's already here. When we're out, it's masks on.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Serengeti Empress chased by Gamin, and here's Gamin striding forward on the outside of Serengeti Empress. Sconson goes third down toward the rail and is still five from the front. Gamin in the final furlong, now at the 16th pole. Gamin, John Velasquez rolling on home to win the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. All Gamin. Be a multiple horse photo for second, third, and fourth. The final time, 1 minute, 20.2 seconds. Track record.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, looking back on the 2020 Breeders' Cup throughout the entire two-hour program here this morning. And as I told you at the top of the show, there were several brilliant performances. Gamin doesn't take a back seat to anybody. That was spectacular. And she did it with style, and you're going to hear from her connections coming up in just a little bit. Of course, she won the Filly and Mare Sprint for trainer Bob Baffert, a first win in that race for Bob, surprisingly. After the races, Breeders' Cup and Jill Byrne, who was the host of the post-race press conferences, took time to visit with all of the different connections after every single Breeders' Cup race, and I'm going to play that interview, that post-race press conference with Bob Baffert and with owner Michael Lund Peterson coming up in just a few minutes. That'll come your way shortly after the top of the hour at 9 o'clock Eastern. Ned Toffee, the general manager of Spendthrift, is set to join me right around 9:20. Our Four Roses visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon, Brent Elliott, Master Distiller comes your way in the second half of the show, too. And at the end, we'll wrap it up with Brad Cox, the man who saddled four Breeders' Cup winners. Two on Friday, two on Saturday. We'll talk to Brad coming up toward the end of the show at 9:40 Eastern. Poll question today. You can weigh in at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, asking you which was the bigger surprise in the Breeders' Cup, Order of Australia with a huge upset in the Breeders' Cup mile, or trainer Chad Brown being shut out in this year's Breeders' Cup, not a single win? Tough question. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Hour 2 kicks off next, right after I pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Tis the Law's got a two-length lead. Dr. Post has moved up on the outside into second. Pneumatic is third, but it is the New York Hero, Tis the Law and Manny Franco to win the Belmont Stakes.
But it's Improbable who has taken command with an authoritative run. From last to first, what a star Improbable has turned into as he is going to romp in the awesome again.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And Honor AP runs right by Authentic. And Odor at the rail and Rushy, a 16th to go. Honor AP a length and a half. Authentic, Rushy running on late. It will be Honor AP, a very impressive winner of the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Tom's Detas shaken up to a three-length lead. By My Standards is trying hard, but he's still second. Silver Dust is third. Multiplier trying to come on late for fourth. But with a 16th to go, it's total domination for Tom's Detas.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, rolling on, jam-packed edition, looking back at the Breeders' Cup from last weekend, and even looking ahead to the 2021 campaign of some of these horses, because as I told you at the top of the show, Spendthrift very active at the Fasig Tipton November sale, the Night of Stars sale, which took place right after the Breeders' Cup. A couple of major purchases. Got Stormy, Monomoy Girl. Both of those expected to remain in training. As a matter of fact, Monomoy Girl already back with trainer Brad Cox. That's great. I'll talk to Ned about that coming up in just a little bit. He'll give you an update on those horses, and he'll look back on the Breeders' Cup Classic with Authentic. And so many different things to like about that story, about B. Wayne Hughes, about Spendthrift, about their team, about the other partners that are involved, Saul Kumin, Starlight Racing, and of course Michael Behrens with MyRacehorse.com. Because of Michael Behrens and that concept of essentially selling shares in a horse, not syndicating, but selling shares the way they do at MyRacehorse, a little different concept, 5,314 people have been able to take this ride with Authentic. And, you know, I said this a couple of weeks ago when Michael was on the show. I guess it was right before the Kentucky Derby, actually. So it was more than a couple of weeks ago, a couple of months ago when Michael was on the show. But you think about the idea of getting people involved for a minimal investment. They get to experience the thrill of owning even a minute piece of a racehorse. And who knows what happens from here? Those 5,314 people have now gotten the thrill of winning the Kentucky Derby. Are you kidding me? The Kentucky Derby. You're in elite company when you get to experience that thrill. And then come back with the Breeders' Cup Classic, too. Two of the biggest, if not the two biggest races we have in the sport, Authentic wins them both. And those people get to experience it. So who knows what happens from here? How many of those 5,314 people that got involved with MyRacehorse.com are going to turn into full-time racehorse owners now? I don't know. That remains to be seen. But you'd have to think that it's the next logical step. We always talk about the fact that winning a horse race is like, it's like a drug. The jockeys talk about it. The trainers talk about it. Owners talk about it. You heard Gary Barber after winning the Juvenile Fillies, his interview on NBC, about how great this game is. And for any owner that's looking to get involved, these are the moments you live for. This is the feeling you want to experience. And the feeling doesn't go away. I remember my wife and I owning small pieces of certain horses with Bob Feld, Jude's brother. And thankfully, every horse we owned won at least one race. Many of them multiple races. Nothing huge, but it doesn't matter. Winning a maiden race, winning a claiming race, winning an allowance race. The thrill you get, it's intoxicating. So how many of those 5,314 people involved with My Racehorse are now going to go on and look at buying horses on their own? Fantastic way to get people involved. Again, Ned Toffee coming up 9:20. I'll ask him about that too. Brad Cox, 9:40. If you missed any portion of the first half of the show, my interview with Ron Moquette, looking back on Whitmore, that was tremendous. Ronnie's so good. And Butch Reed Jr., looking back on VQuist and the Juvenile Fillies. Head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast at your leisure. All right, well, Gamine was one of several stars to shine on Breeders' Cup Saturday. And Jill Byrne hosted the press conference, the post-race press conference with the connections. She got a chance to talk with Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert and with owner Michael Lund Peterson right after the race.
Congratulations, Michael Lund Peterson, Bob Baffert, Gamine, a track record-setting performance. Wow. And Bob, I'll start with you first. Inside of Serengeti Empress, and both wanted the lead, was that a conversation with Johnny Velazquez before the race, if this was going to happen, make an adjustment and try to get outside?
I think we talked about the different scenarios that would happen. And, you know, it was obvious that Serengeti, she's a great filly, and that, you know, she has to make the lead to do her best running. And so, but Johnny wanted to get our filly running and get Serengeti having to get her running. And the way she'd been working, yeah, I knew we could lay off the pace. I've been working her that way, you know, teaching her how to just relax. And as soon as he opened up, Serengeti, he let Serengeti go. He got on the outside. Then he was from there and on. It was whether, you know, if she's the great filly we're hoping she is, and you know, first time she can stalk. And it was at the quarter pole, you know, when she came up to that Serengeti, you could tell Serengeti, she was battling, you know, but this filly is just incredible. I've never trained a filly of this caliber going one turn. And today that little, you know, she had extra time to get ready for this. And after watching the Acorn, I thought she could win the Acorn. I thought she was doing well enough to win. I didn't know she was going to win by 20. The test was just a walk in the park. And the Oaks, you know, I'm still down the road. I think she can mature, but right now she wasn't ready for that, and she was, it was too much traveling for her. But today, one turn, she is just incredible, and I'm just happy for what she's gone through. I felt so bad for the filly, but Michael Lund, you know, he's behind me. I explained to him the nonsense. Contamination stuff that was going on, and we didn't want to have to deal with it. It's a distraction, but today I just wanted to show the world today was her day. You know, when we drew the two hole, I told Mike, I don't know, I started leaking a little bit, she's got the two hole, and tell him what you told me.
Two is my lucky number.
So after that it was like, okay, we're done.
And Mr. Peterson, so emotional after this win with Gamine, and just kind of take us through what she's meant. You've had so much success with Bob, More Spirit, other horses as well, but this Breeders' Cup win has to stand out.
No, not only does it stand out, but it's the first time I ever brought my whole family and we won a race. So that's, I guess that's why I got so emotional, not only winning the Breeders' Cup, but just having all of us here was a great, great experience.
And, you know, Bob had mentioned that, you know, with a difficult, challenging year in so many ways, and so grateful for you and your family for all your support and sticking by him. But, you know, the credentials of Bob Baffert speak for themselves.
No, but, you know, it's all about the team. It's, you know, Bob never wins anything without mentioning his team. And I'm part of his team, and we are proud to be here. And, of course, we support him.
And I want to take some questions from the press box, so they should be sending me down some questions for you. But so what is next for her? She's young, lightly raced. Bob?
You know what? I haven't really thought about a, you know, there's a race at Santa Anita if I wanted to run into La Brea. But I don't know. We might give her a break, you know. Like I said, I'd like to venture out and run her beyond, you know, 7/8 a mile. I mean, New York races are 1/16. You know, one turn, we know what she can do, one turn. And I really think as she gets older, she's going to mentally be able to handle something like that. And like today, she was perfect. I mean, she was great. She ran straight as a string and just really had it all together today. So I think as she gets older, she's going to be even better. And we're just going to have fun with her. And so we'll, you know, I might just give her maybe a little break. And she's, you know, she's had some tough races this year. And we want to enjoy her next year. And we have, you know, she's so much fun because we know when we lead her up there that she's just so brilliant.
And a question coming from the press box. After the two positives, can you be confident that a victory like this will erase any doubts about Gamine and her talents?
Well, I mean, hopefully, I think anybody that knows racing, I mean, the headlines don't sound well, but when you get to the facts, they were contamination. One was an overage, which we were trying to be extra careful. But, you know, now the testing has become so sensitive that we even have to be more careful and be really, I always thought I ran a tight ship. I have to run a tighter ship. You know, we run it like a barn, and we have to run it more like a hospital. And that's the new norm now. And so I'm going to do we're going to do a better job of not even, you know, making sure double check that nobody, their hands are clean, everything, tongue tied, everything. You know, we're in a new age now that, testing is very, and I'm all for sensitive testing, you know, but I don't want to be thrown in with the bad actors. And it's unfortunate it happened to her. And it was nice to see Renée win today. She was another victim of circumstances of contamination. And so, but, you know, I'm just happy that the mare, she showed what a wonderful filly is. And there was no doubt today that how brilliant she just, you know, she's just, that was a tough field. I mean, you know, Serengeti Empress, I mean, we know how she's a great filly. And all those, there was some really nice fillies in there. And to break a track record.
Well, as I was just going to say, the track record, and then watching, you know, those fractions that were going up early with Serengeti Empress, were you at all concerned? Oh my goodness, this is a little quick.
You know what? I was talking to Michael during the race, and I was explaining to him we're in good shape. Once Johnny made Serengeti, you know, put the medal on, we're going to make her run. He got her running. He got Serengeti, you know, running, and then when he tipped out to the outside, that's when I told him, this is perfect, you know, if she's the horse we think she is, she can do it. And not only did she do it, but she showed us more. I mean, just like when she won the Acorn, I thought, you know, I was leaking a little bit. I said, I don't like the one hole, and he told me, Bob, last time you told me you don't like the inside, we won by 20. So I don't want to hear that nonsense.
And also, Mr. Peterson, I was listening to your post-race their interview, and you said, you know, normally you get very nervous, but for some reason you weren't nervous today on the biggest stage.
I was nervous, but not the way I'm nervous the whole day, from when I wake up. And today I just had a good feeling. I can't tell you why, but I had a good feeling, especially when he tells me that we have the same horses we had in New York. That gives you a lot of confidence.
Well, congratulations. Very special to win Breeders' Cup race. Bob, 16 Breeders' Cup wins for you, but your first in the Philly and Mare sprint, and with a filly obviously so special to you?
Oh, it is my first. I can't even remember that. Well, how about that? See, the first, you got him. You got my first.
Hey, I'm happy for you.
Oh.
Well, enjoy and congratulations on Gamine. Very impressive in the Breeders' Cup Filly
and
Mare sprint.
Us.
Thank you.
Great stuff. My thanks to Jill Byrne there for handling all the Breeders' Cup interviews, but certainly to Breeders' Cup and to Blood Horse, by the way, for making those press conferences available and possible. And, what a story there. And a couple of guys that really seem to get along well. They have fun together. Michael Peters, Hall of Famer, who gets that first win with Gamine in the Filly and Mare Sprint, his first win in that particular Breeders' Cup race, and he can add that to an already lofty resume. All right, when I come back, I'll visit with Ned Toffee, the general manager of Spendthrift Farm, and still to come, Brad Cox, looking back on his four Breeders' Cup victories. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include multiple stakes winner and grade 3 victor Recruiting Ready, multiple stakes winner and graded stakes performer Taylor Spirit, and juvenile stakes winner South Bend. In the Pennsylvania Derby, Algorithms notched his first grade 1 winner with a thrilling victory by Matt Wizard. In the ring, his juvenile sold up to $275,000. Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Churchill Downs hosts their 131st fall meet running through Sunday, November 29th. Highlights include the 146th running of the Grade 1 Clark presented by Norton Healthcare on Black Friday, November 27th, and a second Stars of Tomorrow program on Saturday, November 28th, featuring the Grade 2 Kentucky Jockey Club and Grade 2 Goldenrod. In total, the fall meet showcases 10 stakes races, 8 of those graded, offering purses of nearly $1.8 million. Big money, big fields. October 25th to November 29th at Churchill Downs.
Hey, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires, comes your way every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern. Bobby Newman joins me to bring you all of the fall and winter action from places like Aqueduct, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, Del Mar, and Churchill, as well as interviews with the biggest players in thoroughbred racing. That's Race Day on HRRN, presented by Twin Spires. Tune in on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live at horseracingradio.net.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Improbable moves up to third. Maximum Security is fourth and still 5 lengths from the lead and has lost ground around the far turn. Tis the Law is next, still 6 from the front, then Tacitus and Tom's D'Etat. Here comes Improbable to the outside, trying to chase down Authentic as they move into the stretch. Global Campaign is third. Maximum Security is in fourth. Tacitus, then Tis the Law. Authentic hanging top in the final furlong and leads it by 2.5 lengths. Improbable, then Global Campaign, Tacitus, Tis the Law, all behind Authentic, who strides away in the Keeneland sunset for John Velasquez. Authentic has won the Longines Breeders' Cup Classic.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Kurt Becker with the call of the Breeders' Cup Classic last Saturday at Keeneland. Authentic, by the way, pocketing a $1 million bonus with that win, too, pulling off wins in the Haskell, the Kentucky Derby, and the Classic, that part of the Betmakers Bonanza. It was a huge day, not just for owner Spendthrift Farm and Saul Kuhman and Starlight Racing and MyRacehorse.com, but so many people that got to experience the thrill of what this game is all about, including Ned Toffee, who was the general manager of Spendthrift. Ned, like myself, a native of Berkshire County, Massachusetts. Ned, hard to believe, man. Here we are in the bluegrass, and here you are running a farm that now owns a Kentucky Derby and a Breeders' Cup Classic winner. Well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, Mike. It's a long way from the ball fields of Berkshire County, isn't it?
Yeah, and a much better day for you guys than it was for your beloved UMass Minutemen last Saturday.
Well, I was actually born in Ohio, so I kind of, that's my rooting interest. That's a little easier to root for if you want to feel good on Sunday morning.
I have to tell you, I'll spare you the the embarrassment maybe. I don't even know. I wouldn't call it embarrassment, but of tweeting this out. But as I was doing some homework for the show, I happened to look that up, and I found the UMass program, football program, from November of 1986. And there it is, Ned Toffee, a picture of you with the pads on. And I got to tell you, it's an intimidating picture, man. I don't want to run into you head on with a full head of steam.
Well, I think there may have been some bad haircuts involved with that. It didn't really help the look much. But
I don't know. It was the Ivan Drago look. But, man, you looked, yeah, spectacular, man. Hey, what a day. Just let's start by just talking about that classic for a minute. Then we'll get into a whole bunch of the other storylines. But put me there with you for a minute. Sitting there at Keeneland, what was that like?
Well, I'll tell you, you know, we were able to get out to Keeneland this week and get a good look at all the contenders and just watch them. Didn't see any workouts, but watched everybody gallop for several days in a row. And I just thought this was one of the deepest, strongest classic fields. Tom's Dick Tot just looks like a monster. Improbable looked great galloping all week. Tis the Law just, you know, got a little bit of a freshening and just looked great. Fortunately, so did Authentic. Really thought this was going to be a tough race. Things really went well for Authentic. There's so much anticipation. But when those gates opened and it was such a clean start, and I thought Johnny just did such a great job of getting Authentic into just the perfect rhythm. And he was able to stay right in that rhythm. And, you know, I know people have commented, well, you know, they handed, nobody went after him. Well, you know, he can go pretty fast on the front end. So if you want to go after him, it's, you know, chase it your own risk, because you're going to compromise your chances. So, you know, when you've got a horse that has that kind of high cruising speed and, you know, the natural speed to go to the lead and play catch me if you can, that's a tough thing for the competition to deal with.
I know when you were at the Kentucky Derby back on September 5th, you and Eric Gustafson, who is the president of Spendthrift, B. Wayne Hughes, the owner, was not able to be there because of all of the COVID restrictions, and he wanted to stay away. He did not stay away from Keeneland and the Breeders' Cup Classic. How special was it to have the boss man there with you guys?
No, that was great. He was determined to get out there, and he had a great day. I was very, very happy for him to be able to see Authentic and see that win in person and get in the winner's circle and just enjoy that with everybody. And he had a great, great time.
Can you believe this horse Into Mischief and what he has done as a stallion, champion sire now, and now the sire of Authentic and so many other top horses too? I mean, what a Breeders' Cup for Into Mischief. And what a year for Into Mischief, following up what was a championship season last year.
You know, it really is remarkable. I think back to when he was first here and his initial season, he was a $12,500 stud fee. There really wasn't a ton of interest in him. He didn't breed a really as big a book of mares as we would have liked. We came up with all of the every promotion we could think of. That's actually the origin of Share the Upside, was trying to convince people to breed Into Mischief. In the second year, you could have bred to him for $6,500. It was just and so to have been at that point and get to the point where we are now, where he's a $225,000 stud fee, and we may well have underpriced him again. The demand's been overwhelming. He'll breed a really a big but really high quality book of mares this year. And I've had a number of people that, you know, unbiased, but I would call expert observers, longtime industry insiders, that have commented to me that this is, at least in their opinion, is as good a stallion as that they've ever been around doing this. And these are guys that have been in this for 40, 50 years. So that's just a almost a mind-boggling statement when you think of all the greats, even just the greats here that have than here at Spendthrift. The Seattle Sloughs and Nashua and all these wonderful horses. For people to put him on the top of that heap is just really is special. And he's just a remarkable horse. He's so consistent in what he throws. He throws fast, sound, intelligent horses. And we talked a lot about it around Derby time. He's shown the ability to throw a horse that gets the mile and a quarter. He's actually quite high on the leading turf sires rankings these days as well. So he's just been absolutely remarkable. He can just throw any kind, and it's not through any magic on anyone's part. I would love for us to be able to take the credit for his success, but it's him.
Yeah, and Authentic is now going to join his sire Into Mischief as a stallion at Spendthrift Farm. He's officially retired after that win in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Ned, I think that news maybe took some people back a little bit, thinking, okay, here's a horse that's only had 8 lifetime starts. He won 5 of 7 here in 2020 in what is going to be a championship campaign. Why was the decision made to retire him at this point and not bring him back as a 4-year-old?
Well, I think the feeling that he has done, he's really accomplished all of the things that you want to see a horse accomplish. Culminating with the Breeders' Cup Classic, in terms of beating older horses is such a, you know, that's one of the old measures that maybe we've lost a little bit, but he did that on Saturday, and he did it impressively. It's not an easy decision because we're all fans. We would love to watch him run another year, but there is an investment part of this as well, and the horse has been very good to us, but he's, you know, him being able to get into the breeding shed and start breeding mares, that was really the main goal when we bought him. He lived up to all of our expectations on the track. I think the, one of the other things that was in the back of our minds was the uncertainty. With COVID out there, where will he be able to ship and where won't he? Of course, last year the Dubai World Cup was canceled. Frankly, Maximum Security, the ownership still not been paid from the Saudi Cup. The Pegasus purse is our understanding has been dropped and has been rescheduled. There's so much uncertainty with things right now. And the one thing that was certain is that he's going to be very, very well received by breeders. So we felt like it was the time to take him off to stud.
Talking with Ned Toffee, the general manager of Spendthrift Farm here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ned, the folks at Spendthrift, B. Wayne Hughes, wasted no time in giving back to the sport and reinvesting some of that money at the November sale, the Fasic Tipton November sale, the Knight of Stars sale, which was on Sunday evening. You had a huge impact on that sale, purchasing Monomoy Girl for $9.5 million. That is a world record for a racing and broodmare prospect sold at public auction. And you came back and you bought Got Stormy, and then Bast, another one that will join the Spendthrift roster. Brad Cox is going to join me next. Brad is a big fan of Spendthrift now because you decided to keep Monomoy Girl in training and keep Monomoy Girl with Brad. I know Got Stormy, from what I understand, is going to remain in training. Talk about some of those purchases and those decisions.
Yeah, we felt like going into this sale with Into Mischief having reached the levels that he's reached with Authentic coming in at such a high price point for a first year horse, and including some of the horses that we added last year to our roster with Omaha Beach and Vino Rosso and Matoli.
Yep.
We wanted to make sure that that we had. We just wanted to add to the top of our broodmare band and make sure we had the type of, you know, elite broodmare prospects and broodmares to use ourselves on these stallions. Mr. Hughes in the past has oftentimes moved our own mares out of the way and allowed outside breeders to use these horses. And we'll still do a lot of that, but we wanted to have a really, really select group to use on some of these top stallions and stallion prospects that we've got. And so that was really the thinking there. It seemed like a good year to do it. And Monomoy Girl, we're obviously going to look forward, and she and Got Stormy, we're going to look forward to those guys staying in training and maybe earn a little bit of that investment back, and then we'll see where we are a year from now with them.
You know, Michael Behrens of MyRacehorse.com mentioned after the win in the Breeders' Cup Classic that there were 5,314 people involved through MyRacehorse.com that got to experience this ride with Authentic and this win in the Breeders' Cup Classic. So spend just a minute, Ned, talking about the impact that could have on our sport moving forward.
Well, you know, Michael came out about a year ago and pitched this My Racehorse to us, and it was something he had done a tremendous amount of the groundwork on, and gotten a lot of the heavy lifting out of the way. But when he pitched it to us, Mr. Hughes just loved the idea, and he just really felt like this was an opportunity to expand our fan base, our client base, to reach people that maybe we weren't reaching, and try to engage them in a way, in sort of a modern way, that would, you know, try to bolster what frankly is sort of a dwindling fan and ownership base. So, you know, to have 5,300 people involved in one horse, and the first year of this whole project to have a Derby winner, that'll be tough to top. But I think it's already had a great effect on things, and I think it has a chance to continue to do so. So we plan to continue to support them, and we're looking forward to it. But I think it really has a chance to help expand our fan base, which is really, really important right now.
Yeah, well, Ned, listen, congratulations to you, to the entire team at Spendthrift, and to everybody involved with Authentic. It's a really special ride here in 2020. There's no doubt that he will be voted 3-year-old champion male, and there is talk now that he should be Horse of the Year, and that may be the case too. But listen, all the best moving forward with the stallions and with the horses that you purchased this year, and I know there's bigger and better things, if you can even say that. There are bigger and better things still to come from Spendthrift. I can feel it, and keep up the great work out there, my friend. Thank you for all your support.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you for having me.
All right, Ned Toffee here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, just an incredible story there surrounding Authentic and the team and everything that's gone into that. And look, there is plenty of talk now that he should be Horse of the Year. Bobby Newman, who was my analyst on the broadcast on Saturday afternoon, said it after the race. He said he is your Horse of the Year here in 2020. Who else is going to top him? Monomoy Girl? Throw her name into the ring. Look at what she accomplished. Yeah, pretty special. It was a good year. I mean, outside all the COVID restrictions and the alternate schedules and everything, the racing product this year, I think, was really, really solid, and it will continue to be moving forward. All right, coming up next is Brad Cox. He'll join me in just about 7 or 8 minutes from right now, but it's time for your monthly visit with the folks at Four Roses Bourbon in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, and I welcome in Brent Elliott as he spent some time talking about the uniqueness of Four Roses. Since 1888, Four Roses has been made with the same passion and handcrafted as only they can, and this interview, much like the iconic bourbon, handcrafted by Four Roses. And today I have the privilege of visiting with Brent Elliott, who is the master distiller and quality director here at Four Roses. Brent, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for coming out, Mike.
So what is it that makes Four Roses bourbon so unique?
That's a good question. I think if you, and the simple answer is just the taste, the quality. I think we're very proud of what we do here. You know, every Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey has its profile. Every bourbon whiskey that's out there is special in its own right. I feel like ours has its niche. I think it's very, very crisp, very delicate, very smooth, easy to drink. And there are ways we achieve that. We always like to talk about, first, our single-story warehouses that we use. You know, if you look at the aging of bourbon, you always hear that Kentucky is ideal for aging bourbon because of the temperature variations. We have very hot summers, very cold winters. So from right there, you realize that temperature plays a fundamental role in how bourbon ages. And if you look at what we do, we have single-story warehouses because that gives us a more consistent temperature variation from the bottom to the top of our warehouses. So when we go to pull barrels out, you know, 5, 6, 10 years after they're put in, we don't have to worry too much about the ones at the top being remarkably different from the ones at the bottom, which there are ways around that. Many distilleries do that. You know, they just create different products depending on what section of the warehouse it came from. But for us, we like them to be consistent so that we don't have to worry too much about the differences. And that's really important because of what I'm going to talk about next. That's another part of our uniqueness is we create different bourbon recipes here. And I don't mean labels. Yes, we have different products. We have the Four Roses Bourbon, the Four Roses Small Batch, and the Single Barrel that you can get on the shelf pretty much anywhere. But each one of those is made with different recipes. And the way we do that is by utilizing different mash bills, which is a grain recipe. Now, both of them use corn, obviously, as the primary grain. They have to be bourbon. We use rye as our secondary or flavoring grain. Gives a lot of nice spice, structure, backbone to the bourbon, and then a small portion of malted barley. So we have two different mash bills or ratios of those grains, both high in rye. One extremely high; it's 35% rye in the mash bill, which is higher than just about any bourbon out there, probably more than any other major distillery is producing. And then we have the lower rye mash bill, which is 20%. So we start with that foundation. We have two foundations, that is the mash. And then we ferment each one of those, or either one of those, with one of five different yeast strains. Now, all yeast does the same thing. It creates alcohol. That's why it's used. But there's also a small portion of what we refer to as congeners, these other byproducts of fermentation that are very important to the flavor of the particular spirit that's being made. And for us, each one of these creates different flavors, whether it's fruity, spicy, floral, herbal, whatever it might be. It has each one of these yeast strains creates those flavors on top of the mash bill. So two mash bills, five yeast strains, that's how we arrive at 10 recipes. And then with those recipes, we're able to create uniquely or fundamentally different products. So our Four Roses Bourbon, that uses up to all 10 of those recipes. Small batches, four of them, and our standard 100 proof single barrel is always the same recipe.
Well, I'd imagine you have to be a master distiller just to keep it all straight.
Yeah, it was a mouthful, wasn't it?
Brent Elliott, he is the master distiller and quality director here at Four Roses. You can learn more by visiting fourrosesbourbon.com. Thanks, Brent.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, coming up next, you will hear from trainer Brad Cox looking back on his four Breeders' Cup victories last weekend. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Adina Spring Stallion Mucho Macho Man. Tough, sound, durable. A stakes winner at 3, 4, 5, and 6 who competed in all three Triple Crown races before turning 3 years old and capped a stellar career with a determined victory in the Breeders' Cup Classic over champions Will Take Charge and Declaration of War.
Mucho Macho Man has the lead close to home! Mucho Macho Man, Declaration of War! Will Take Charge and Final Man! Mucho Macho Man! He did it over Will Take Charge!
Mucho Macho Man has produced two first crop grade one winners, one on dirt.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup. He won it by 5 lengths.
And one on turf.
And the California bred Mucho Unusual all the way in the Rodeo Drive.
The number one North American sire by 2020 average earnings per runner is Mucho Macho Man, standing at Adina Springs.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
In 1993, Dr. John West showed that EIPH occurs during exercise when blood vessels in the lungs rupture. This is due to stress caused by high blood pressure on the inside of the vessels and strong suction forces on the outside. Only flare strips and Lasix, used together or alone, have been clinically proven to reduce EIPH. Lasix works by reducing the high internal pressures, and flare strips work by reducing the suction forces on the outside. See the science at flarestrips.com.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Harvest Moon is the leader with a quarter mile to go in the distaff. Leading Monomoy Girl a length and a half. Valiant's third up on the outside. Harvest Moon is right there. Swiss Skydiver is looking for running room down toward the rail. Monomoy Girl got the jump, though, and she leads the field into the final furlong. Valiant's to her outside. Harvest Moon third. Swiss Skydiver fourth. Valiant's trying to catch Monomoy Girl. Late run from Dunbar Road to third. Monomoy Girl in front. Monomoy Girl wins the distaff by two lengths on the line for Floron Giroux in 1 minute 47.84 seconds.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Breeders' Cup look back edition of the Equine Forum. And that was one of the moments that I'm never going to forget. Monomoy Girl scoring in the Breeders' Cup distaff. Kurt Becker had the call there. And her second win in the distaff, her first, of course, coming in 2018. After that, she was sidelined by some physical issues. Wasn't sure if she was going to get back to the races. There was a time when we didn't know if we were ever going to see Monomoy Girl again. She was away for 18 months before returning on May 16th of this year at Churchill Downs in an allowance race. All she did was win that race by 2 3/4 lengths. She came back, went to New York, took the Grade 2 Ruffian at Belmont Park, the Grade 1 La Troyenne at Churchill on September 4th, and then, as you just heard, the Breeders' Cup distaff for the second time. You know, I talked about Authentic at the end of that interview with Ned Toffee in the previous segment, undoubtedly being one of the favorites to be Horse of the Year this year, but how about Monomoy Girl? You think she'll get any votes? You think she'll be among the finalists? She should be. I know she didn't beat the boys like Zenyatta did. But what Monomoy Girl and Brad Cox have accomplished is pretty incredible. 18 months on the sidelines. She comes back with a vengeance. She goes 4-for-4 here in 2020. She runs her record, her career record. How about this? 13. When you look at her past performances, by the way, it's all ones. The entire page of her PPs is all ones in the finish column. First ballot Hall of Famer. She is 13-for-15 lifetime with 2 seconds. Her earnings now up over the $4 million mark. And the daughter of Tapazar just continues to get better. We said at the top of the show, well, I guess it was going into last week's show, actually, when I talked about Monomoy Girl and the fact that many people thought she might be better in 2020 than she was in 2018 when she had that championship season and won her first distaff. There are not enough superlatives to use when talking about Monomoy Girl. Brilliant, awesome, incredible, champion. She has it all. And we are efforting trainer Brad Cox now, trying to get a hold of Brad to have him join us for a few minutes to talk about that special day, not just with Monomoy Girl. So Brad Cox, well, he knows a thing or two about saddling a good horse, right? He has saddled thousands of winners in his career. As a matter of fact, I think his total stands at, it's more than 1,400. It's like, yeah, it is, 1,446. That's how many winners Brad Cox has saddled. Coming into this year's Breeders' Cup, he had won 3 Breeders' Cup races. He wins 4 here in 2020, equaling the mark of Richard Mandela, the Hall of Famer, who did it in 2003. Keep in mind, when Richard did it, it was a different type of event. You didn't have as many races, and that's not to take anything away from Brad Cox. It's to put into perspective exactly how great of an accomplishment it was for Richard Mandela in 2003. So Brad's 4 winners this year. The Juvenile Fillies Turf with Aunt Pearl. She remains perfect, 3 for 3. The Juvenile with Essential Quality, who will now be among the favorites. They like to say the winter book favorite. Among the favorites for the Run for the Roses coming up May 1st of 2021. He comes back with the on Saturday with Nick's Go in the Dirt Mile. And you look at what Nick's Go has accomplished since Brad Cox took over his training. Well, all he's done is go undefeated. He's a perfect 3 for 3. And the Maryland bred found himself dominating the Dirt Mile on Saturday. And then he comes back with Monomoy Girl in the Distaff and talked about her. She is now owned by Spendthrift Farm, as you heard Ned Toffee talk about in the previous segment. She will remain in training with Brad Cox. Brad sent out a tweet the other day with a video of her getting off the van back at his barn and just said, she's back. And she's back in a big way. Lee, let's call Brad again. He just actually sent me a text that he's ready to go, so we'll have Brad join me here in just a minute and look back on those 4 wins. But what a special day. A special Breeders' Cup for Brad Cox. Again, it was part of what I consider to be a spectacular Breeders' Cup. Had all the makings of a great Breeders' Cup. You had the upsets that I talked about earlier, led by Order of Australia, drawing into the Breeders' Cup Mile the morning of the race, pulling off the shocker at 73-1. You had a little bit of heartbreak. Not just for the connections that didn't win, but how about jockey Christophe Soumillon, who tested positive for COVID after arriving here from Europe. Both horses that Christophe was scheduled to ride, including Order of Australia, won. Got a feel for Christophe. And then you had the human interest stories that were so special. Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez winning 2 races, including his first classic. Butch Reed, you heard from him in the first half of the program. Winning with the Juvenile Fillies with VQuist. Ron Moquette, he also joined me in the first half of the show today. And you can go back and listen to the podcast after I wrap things up at 10 o'clock Eastern. His 7-year-old gelding, Whitmore, finally breaking through in the Breeders' Cup Sprint in his 4th consecutive try to win that race. Yeah, so many great storylines associated with this year's Breeders' Cup. By the way, poll question. At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. This was another storyline, in my opinion anyway, because I found it shocking. What was the bigger surprise in this year's Breeders' Cup? Order of Australia pulling off that huge upset in the Breeders' Cup Mile? Or trainer Chad Brown being shut out over the course of the 2 days? I think if you had... Well, I know for a fact, if you had said on Thursday, if you'd run this poll question and say which was more likely, it was going to be the fact that Order of Australia would not win the Breeders' Cup Mile. Chad Brown was not going to get shut out. He's too good. His horses are too good. He was. So what was the bigger surprise in this year's Breeders' Cup? Let me know at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Brad Cox is indeed with us now, and the man who is was in the spotlight both Friday and Saturday, and he'll continue to do so moving forward, I'm sure. Brad, welcome to the program, my friend. Thanks for taking a few minutes.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. I know you've got a busy schedule, so I won't keep you long, but we've got four big wins to talk about, and it started with Aunt Pearl on Friday taking the Juvenile Phillies turf. First of all, Brad, four Breeders' Cup wins. You equal Richard Mandela's mark that he set in 2003. Just put that in perspective for me. When you hear that and you think about it, what goes through your mind?
It was an amazing weekend. Very proud of our staff and our horses, and very, very happy for our owners that give us solid animals to work with. I mean, really, that's what it comes down to is stock, and we're blessed to have some very good stock, and they came in all the horses, not just the four that won, but the four that didn't win. They were all trained extremely well. Felt very confident they would all run their races, and we were fortunate enough to get there with four of them, and it was a weekend we'll never forget. Those are memories that last a lifetime, for sure.
Well, I know that she's just getting started with her career, but Aunt Pearl, at this point anyway, has the look of an absolute monster. How good is she?
She's good. She's really good, and she's kind of shown us of the mornings, leading up to her debut that she was good. Started to take her to Saratoga. We had the September meet here at Churchill, elected to start. I believe that was opening day here at Churchill in September, and we elected to just keep her home and run her out of our own stall, and it worked out well. And then we turned our attention toward the Jessamine, and she showed up and put in three big efforts to start her career, and we really think she's a filly that can compete on the international level as well. So hopefully she'll get a little freshening, and hopefully she'll be around next year and maybe for a couple years. The ownership group loves racing, and she's a special filly.
You return later that day with an undefeated colt by the name of Essential Quality, the son of Tappet, who goes on and takes the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. He's now a perfect 3-for-3. What do you see from him that makes you think, okay, let's start dreaming of some roses?
Well, he's obviously a very well-bred Godolphin homebred. He's stamina, I guess, is the biggest thing that gives you the confidence moving forward that he would be able to get a mile and a quarter. He does have enough speed to put himself in a race like he did in the Breeders' Futurity, and he was able to break his maiden going three quarters first time out. So, very talented colt that, just really seems to have an unbelievable amount of stamina. He's shown that really since day one from the first time we breezed him. I mean, came in great shape. Niall Brennan broke him and sent him to us, and came in with high marks, and he just continued on throughout the spring, summer, and fall, and he gives you a lot of confidence training just because it just really can't get to the bottom of him. I mean, he just really is a talented horse that appears to be a mile and a quarter horse.
Yeah, so much of the buzz coming into Saturday, too, after you wrapped up Friday, was surrounding Monomoy Girl and an attempt to win a second Breeders' Cup Distaff and everything that she had to overcome to get back to this point. That was one of the great storylines. But before you got there, you sent out Nick's Go to win the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, and he's undefeated since you took over his training. And I'm thinking, okay, now Brad Cox is just showing off.
Well... he's a good colt. We had him last winter, and I knew a little bit about the horse. I think we ran behind him maybe in like the Ellis Park Derby, and obviously I remember him winning the Breeders' Futurity and running a big race in the Breeders' Cup here in 18 at Churchill against Game Winner. So, I mean, listen, it isn't like this horse just all of a sudden he was a grade one horse. He was a grade one horse when we got him. We picked him up from Blackwood Farm in Lexington or Midway. Robbie Medina was training him there at Blackwood, and he came into us in great shape. Very forward training horse, loved to train. And when you look down and see that he was eligible for the two other than, I thought, wow, well, what more could you ask for? I mean, this horse, if there's any meat left on the bone, I mean, he's going to totally be tough in the spot, and he was. We were very excited about that race, and his next work or two following that, and he came up with a lameness. We had to give him some time off. There was a surgery involved. We thought about retiring him. The timing worked out to where we were able to bring him back, and we thought, if he's as good as he was, we'll march on with him, and he was. And then for him to be able to knock out the three other. Then we thought about going in the ACAC, Churchill. I just didn't think it was quite the right move off the layoff with a large field. There was the three other then opening weekend there at Keeneland. I thought it made the most sense. And to tell you that I thought he would be a horse we were going to be pointing for the dirt mile, not the case. This was something we were – the three other then was maybe a prep for like the Clark Handicap or the Cigar Mile or something along those lines. But with the way he performed at Keeneland and him being able to get into the dirt mile, you know, it all kind of came together very quick. And, you know, he rewarded the ownership group in a big way.
Brad, I'm literally about 45 seconds away from my final commercial break here on the show, but I had goosebumps watching Monomoy Girl do her thing in the Breeders' Cup Distaff.
Yeah, no, it was an amazing race. And, you know, the way she was training, you know, led us to believe that she was going to fire one of her biggest efforts ever. And I think she did. I think it was her best race to date, given, you know, she gave up some ground on maybe a racetrack that played a little inside bias. And just very proud of her. She ran a huge race.
Brad, appreciate the quick visit. I know you've got things to get to. I'll let you go. But thanks for taking a few minutes here today. And congratulations. Continued success.
Thanks for having me on, Mike, and we'll talk soon. Thank you.
All right, Brad Cox here on the Equine Forum. We're going to get to another break. We'll come back and wrap this one up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the 2020 Triple Crown and Breeders' Cup.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
46 Solutions makes technology easy. We manage the day-to-day technology needs of Kentucky businesses by offering 24/7 help desk support, infrastructure design, and cybersecurity protection to keep your focus on your business. Our residential engineers can design and install media rooms, home theaters, and make sure your home Wi-Fi network runs smoothly with the best speeds available. Visit 46solutions.com today. 46 Solutions is your technology partner.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Penna, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, don't forget, you won't want to miss the November 14th issue of Blood Horse Magazine. The special 130-page issue features All of the Breeders' Cup results with feature stories on all 14 Breeders' Cup races. You can download a copy of the issue now from the Blood Horse Magazine app via the App Store or Google Play. And don't miss their fall special, which is going on right now. 10 weekly issues for only $10. Go to bloodhorse.com/fall20 to learn more. Oh, what a show. And what a Breeders' Cup it was. Started the show by telling you how I thought it was fantastic, and I think that if you listen to these last 2 hours, my interviews with Ron Moquette and Butch Reed Jr. and Ned Toffee, Brad Cox, you heard from Bob Baffert and Michael Lund-Peterson, I think you might agree that this Breeders' Cup was pretty special. Yeah, my thanks to all of those individuals for helping to make this show possible. Don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, it's simple. All you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show, all of our shows, at your leisure, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. For my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, for Chauncey, handling all of our social media, I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening, and yeah, bring on the Bengals. Go Steelers.